Welcome to the latest Watercolors Aquarium Gallery podcast, brought to you from the Aquarium Rush Studios in downtown Grand Rapids, Michigan. My name is Ben.
I'm Amy.
And I'm Charles.
This is going to be kind of an interesting topic that I wasn't sure how to approach. I wasn't sure how I would feel about this topic because it's kind of personal for me right now. Not right now. Yeah. Has been for a few years.
Big and scary.
Big and scary.
We're talking about aquarium burnout. But we have two things to do before we get into that.
I was almost about to because you were getting going and I didn't think you were going to stop.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Don't worry. I had to introduce the topic first, you know.
Okay.
But there's two things we have to do before that. First, we have to thank Helen.
Yes.
She brought us New Galaris beer from Wisconsin. She is a podcast listener and, I think that's really awesome that
yes.
she brought us beer.
So we love getting beer.
We do very much. Yes. Yeah, so thank you very much. We are drinking them as we record this podcast and yeah. it's delicious.
Cheers.
Cheers. And
we have to do our shameless plug.
Yay.
You know, somebody on Facebook said that it was their favorite part of the episode.
Really?
So
excellent.
We appreciate you.
Yes, we do.
Go to watercolorsaquariumgallery.com for merch, for live plants, for aquarium merchandise, whatever your heart desires.
How many different plant species are up right now?
Right now, we're probably around a dozen, but I've got about a dozen more drafts that I just need to take pictures of and just get them up there. So definitely some new stuff coming soon. And if you follow us on Facebook, you should be able to see those things as they come out too.
Awesome. I love it. Cool.
Oh, we do have a new plug that we need to make at the beginning of the episodes because we have a call to action for our listeners, don't we? They need to email us.
Oh, yes. Thank you. That's right.
So if you want to send in questions for us to read on air... Are we sure?
We're doing this,
okay,
guys.
Okay.
We're doing this.
Email podcast@watercolorsaquariumgallery.com with the subject line. We came up with one. I don't remember.
I don't either.
For Nick's eyes only.
I think it was like,
call it that.
I think it was like origin of questions.
Yes.
Origin of questions. That was it.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Origin of questions. Or for Nick's eyes only. Either one.
Yeah. Or yes, Charles, do not look at this. That works too.
That
yeah.
would honestly work. I will look at it and go, okay.
Maybe
keep
I
scrolling.
Shouldn't look at that. But yeah, questions, non-specific aquarium questions, questions about us. Try to be nice.
Mostly
we'll skip
nice.
It if you're too mean.
Yeah, exactly. Nick will preview the questions, sorta.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it'll be fun. It'll be a good one. We did that with the watercolors team here, kind of as a tester to see how it would go, and it was fun. I think it went well, and
yeah,
I'm hoping that you know people are a little more risky.
Yes.
Yeah. So. Yes, let us know what you think, and what did you always want to know about us, or what have we neglected to talk about?
Cool.
There we go.
Looking forward to it.
All right.
Now, how do we talk about aquarium burnout?
I don't know. I'm sick of it already.
This guy.
So first of all, let's talk about what it is.
Yeah.
I read on one of the... So I did a little Google. What to do if you're burned out in your hobby,
mm-hmm.
right? And the very first piece of advice that this particular, clearly an authority person, because it was on the internet, you know, so definitely somebody who knew the topic well. The very first piece of advice was just to step away from the hobby for a little while. Well, that works if you're knitting or skateboarding
yeah.
or getting into vintage stereo stuff, but that's kind of hard on fish.
Yeah, what happens when you have 30 tanks of fish depending on you and you don't even want to go in the fish room anymore?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I guess a good place to start is what makes it fun, I guess, and then why does it stop being fun?
Yeah.
The conversations I was having about this topic leading up to it, like the universal thing that people agreed on and talked about was the idea that like this hobby is very much like relationship.
Mm-hmm.
and there's a give and a take. And just like any long-term relationship you have, whether romantic or platonic, you are going to have times in that lifespan where you're just doing it to maintain the relationship. And that is as much as you can do.
Right.
Sure.
One thing that I definitely learned through my life as an aquarium keeper is, and this is, this wasn't so much personal experience, but this was watching other hobbyists. Saltwater hobbyists get burned out way faster than freshwater hobbyists.
Mm-hmm.
When I say that in groups of people, I often get this, oh, what? Because there's this perception out there that saltwater is quote unquote cooler. By the way, I don't agree with that.
More fun.
More
even.
Fun. Right.
Yeah.
But it's if you look simply at the history of aquarium clubs in West Michigan, there are two freshwater aquarium clubs currently going in West Michigan. One of them was founded, I believe, in 1967. The other one was founded, I believe, in 1992. There have been four saltwater aquarium clubs in West Michigan. And for me, this includes the Kalamazoo area and the metropolitan Grand Rapids area, just because that's areas that I'm most familiar with. There have been four saltwater focused clubs, and three of them I watched them show up, I watched them blossom, and I watched them fall apart. Three of them. The one that's currently going has been going for, I think, a year. Not quite.
Not quite.
Not quite a year. That to me, that is just evidence of that's what happens in the hobby.
Yeah.
And this is just me thinking about the topic as you're talking about it. I'm inclined to think that it's less about the hobby of saltwater keeping itself, but more about the culture of saltwater hobbyists. As in, it's a lot easier to find comrades in arms in freshwater than it is in saltwater. And like my experience with it, with the hobby and other people's experiences that I talk to, if you don't have someone that you can kind of like talk to about the hobby, you're less likely to stay in it.
I think that's absolutely true.
Mm-hmm. The barrier for entry to get into saltwater is higher. There are more freshwater hobbyists. But you're right that people stay in the saltwater hobby for less time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I think that's because every saltwater hobbyist has to kind of function as their own like solitude of island of solitude. You know what I mean? And just like make it work on their own. And that's kind of unfortunate.
Successful saltwater aquariums done by hobbyists that are older than 5 years are
rare.
Rare. Mm-hmm. And so here's what I think is the life of the saltwater aquarium hobbyist, and as you get into it. And hopefully this isn't going to turn people away from the saltwater hobby. That's not my intention here, but let's say you're going to do it as your dream tank, right? And so I don't want to say money's not an issue, but you're willing to put the amount of money in to make it what you want it. So you get your 180 gallon aquarium. Now we're going to go 120. We'll go a little bit more realistic. And really that's if I would do one again, that's the size that I would do. So let's go with that size, right? And you get all excited about learning and building everything for this 120 gallon aquarium. And you get into it and you're careful and you do everything right. To get that aquarium so it's perfect and established and the corals are filled in, it's really probably close to 2 years.
Yeah. And that's without any stalling. That's right. You're doing perfectly for 2 years.
Yeah. So then let's say you've got your 10 fish in your tank after 2 years, the corals are kind of filled in. There's not a whole lot more room for it. You don't have room for fish. You don't have room for corals. Now all you're doing after that 2 year period is taking care of it. That's it. You go to the LFS and you look at other tanks and go, oh, I don't really have room for that because my aquarium is so awesome. After 2 years of that, then what?
Right.
Pretty soon it just becomes this really beautiful thing that you have to put a whole bunch of work into. Or, you know, you get your maintenance schedule down. It might not be a bunch of work, but it's definitely that chore, that routine.
Yeah, and it's only taking and not giving as much. Mm-hmm. The rush of setting up a new tank gets you through that first year.
Mm-hmm.
It's really fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to put in a bunch of stuff. Buying stuff is like the best part of having an aquarium.
That's kind of like a major part of a lot of hobbies.
Exactly.
Right?
Just yeah. something you can always be improving. And when that runs out, yeah, you burn out even when things are going well.
Right. A lot of saltwater hobbyists that I've seen stay excited about it. Also set up a frag tank and buy and sell frags.
Yeah.
But then what I see happen is the display sometimes gets taken down and they just buy and sell frags.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. How do we avoid that? What's the, before we get into how to avoid it, I think that should be like the last part of the discussion, right? I want to talk more about what it is and what causes it.
Yeah, I think bringing up that sort of decline in enjoyment is a pretty good place mm-hmm. to start. But mm-hmm. the tank crash is the other big...
That's a huge one.
That's just one big blow that's really hard to recover from.
Yep.
And that's more likely to happen most of the time and more catastrophic in saltwater tanks most of the time.
Yeah.
You can lose thousands of dollars if your saltwater crane crashes.
Mm-hmm.
All of us in this room have experienced some burnout, right? We've all gotten to that point of super uber excitement and then faded out. Charles, I think you have one of the more dramatic examples of it. I mean, you were pretty much done with the hobby 5 years ago.
Yeah, I was ready to be done. That one was a combination of a lot of things. It was definitely that it stopped being fun, though. A lot of it boiled down to that I had worked in another professional aquarium environment that wasn't healthy at all. And the lack of enjoyment I was experiencing in the workplace started leaking over into my home tanks.
Right.
And I eventually just stopped adding more tanks. And I slowly, as stuff died off, I didn't replace them. And tank after tank after tank. And at the end there... the only tank I had set up was for my wife's betta, and I was fully committed to the idea that when that fish died, that was my last tank. Yeah.
Yeah. For me, it was my fish room at home and doing it professionally. That's kind of a different kind of burnout.
Yeah.
And I experience it, all right, full confession stuff here, right? I experience it here regularly. When I go downstairs and I look at what I should be looking at is all of these amazing things that we're doing. And we are. We've got amazing sharks. We've got killer saltwater fish. We've got incredible planet aquariums. There's a lot of times where I have to work at being excited about it at this point. And that's after 30 years plus as a hobbyist and 15 years as a professional. It's been 15 years? 2006, 2007. Yeah, 15 years. Sheesh. Yeah, so okay, so I'm allowed to be a little bored with it sometimes, right?
Yeah.
What else causes it? I mean, for me, time. I did a whole bunch of stuff.
For me, it's just like my tanks at home just start to feel like another responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And then that makes me not want to do them. And then they're just another responsibility that I'm avoiding, which makes it worse. But like when life gets busy... That's the last thing that you want to be doing is being forced to take care of a hobby. And with an aquarium, you are like, there's no stepping away. Like you were saying earlier.
Yeah.
There's a specific trajectory with aquarium hobbyist in the United States that's I discovered is a little different than most people in other countries. And I've been kind of curious. Like, I don't have any ideas or thoughts other than I wonder what the connection there is, if at all. But in most places in the world, the trajectory is that you have one tank that you keep upgrading.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
And in the States, the trajectory is definitely you have more tanks.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very curious as to how much people leaving the hobby entirely is the when you reach that stage of, oh, it's a responsibility I don't want to deal with at the moment, I should put it on the back burner. That's a little different if it's a 120-gallon planet aquarium. It's very different if it's 20 20-gallon aquariums, though.
Right.
You know yeah. what I mean? Like, putting one tank on the back burner is manageable.
Putting it a little bit into autopilot.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
You can't do that with dozens of tanks.
Right.
No.
Right. That's why I have one tank at home, and that one tank can be put into autopilot really easily. Mm-hmm. Most days I come in here and I absolutely love everything we do. And part of what I love about it is I get to pay other people to take care of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's another two confession there, right? Mm-hmm. A couple of years ago, while we were working on the quarantine process and some other things were happening with other hobbyists around me that really got me close to being completely done with the hobby. And that's watching other people fail miserably.
Yeah.
That's a combination for me of watching hobbyists do stupid things and watching the industry set people up for failure.
Yeah, I got close to that. I've alluded to it in a previous podcast, but I came close to it with the whole Lacey Act Amendments.
Yeah.
The reaction to that was just so over the top that I had these moments of like, why am I in this industry where people react like this?
Yeah,
what is this?
And you feel that way when you see someone do something ridiculous, because when humans do stupid things, fish die.
That's the killer, like, right?
Part what of the are we doing there. Here?
But learning from mistakes is one thing, but making mistakes that cause loss of life.
It's hard.
That could have been avoided.
Yeah, exactly. Especially when it's other people's incompetence.
Yeah.
Or
that's just exhausting.
For me, what's worse is the worst form of it is when I can't figure out what went wrong. When you have a catastrophic, like if I have a catastrophic failure and I can't go back and go, it was something dumb I did. If I say, I have no idea, that's awful.
That's awful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something dumb I did, at least there's an explanation. Mm-hmm. And there's always an explanation. Always.
Always.
It's never because of the alignment of Jupiter and Saturn.
Yeah.
There are no cursed tanks, guys. We talked about this last week.
It's as Ben and I alluded to in the last episode, it's there's a pattern here and I'm not smart enough to figure out what it is.
Right.
Yeah. Charles, you said you talked to some people around about like what caused burnout. And I've got a whole list of like this is what I have seen. But you said you talked to people recently. And so what's the word on the street? Caused burnout that you've seen?
All of it comes back to the idea of like, it stopped being as fun. And I think you can boil down everything I heard down to two forms, like two subcategories. Mm-hmm. One of them would be stagnation, which would, like the saltwater tank where you haven't been able to buy anything in 2 years.
Right.
That would definitely fall under that one. Yep. And then the other one was not seeing results is how I would define it. Like if you've had 6 breeding projects in a row, nothing happened, or you had that catastrophic tank crash, or like you're not succeeding in some form. Mm-hmm. And then I think the stagnation one would also fill up that category of like you have 20 tanks and it becomes like a burden or however you want to define it. And I had one quote that really stuck out to me was I had a conversation with someone where she specifically said the reason why she burned out was, and I quote, "I didn't downsize quickly enough when life got hectic."
Mm. Ooh, that's a good point.
Mm-hmm. And that one really stuck out to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had a couple, some customers, it was probably 3 or 4 years ago. I think it was before we moved to this store.
I think it was about a year before we moved.
Yeah. These people came in. I think they had a bad experience at one other store with their first tank.
Mm-hmm.
Then they came in here and they were buying a new tank just about every week.
Yeah.
For like 2 years. Mm-hmm. And then they transformed an outbuilding on their property into a fish house. And it was it was every single week they were doing this huge major project. Huge. I mean, they were just
going for it. Yeah.
And 2.5 years later, after we met them, they called us and said, "Hey, do you want our stuff?" And I think that's another form of another cause of burnout.
It's a classic pattern. And like in the position of local fish store, we get this like third party view into everybody's hobby. Mm-hmm. And it's like a clockwork thing. Like you start your first tank, you struggle for a year, then things start to stabilize and you realize you don't have any more room. So you get a second one and then you realize it's not harder.
Right.
And then you realize, oh, it's not harder to have two tanks. Now I can have everything I want.
And I want this fish and this fish and this fish and this fish.
And then you start getting three and four. And usually this is the point where I start to get a little bit worried about you. Because you get into that second year of, well, now your first tank is starting to have long-term problems. You got rid of the short-term beginner problems, but now you have a mature aquarium with a different set of issues. And now you have all these new projects that are in that one-year phase that are having a vast array of issues. By the time everything's settled, you don't even want it anymore.
Yeah, I do genuinely think that a lot of hobbyists, like, I'm going to ignore how much time we spent in this podcast talking about how the industry sets hobbyists up to fail. I'm going to ignore that completely. I do think a lot of hobbyists set themselves up to fail.
That's definitely true, too.
We're like, I actually have a list of ways. High energy tanks that require frequent water changes, fish that have to be fed multiple times a day.
Or only frozen or live foods.
Right. Multiple tank syndrome, but too fast. Mm-hmm. It's just not sustainable as an individual. Mm-hmm. You can't be 100% 100% of the time. That's not how human beings work.
Right. I think that's that one of the things that people run into is that it's not sustainable for most people. I know hobbyists in the aquarium club that have had 20 plus tanks for 30 plus years. And still, it's what they do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's a guy out of the Kalamazoo Club that every once in a while he shows up here and he's a bachelor and has been he's late 60s, early 70s, never been married, always been a bachelor. Worked really hard his entire life for the same company. I'm not going to get too much details because I'll call him out. His name is Jim. He worked for one of the big telephone companies, started on the line, I don't know how many years ago, a long, long time ago. And then that big telephone company split and divided and split and divided. And he had shares when he started working for him as a regular laborer. And he built, I think it was probably 15 years ago, he built the most incredible fish house I know of. It has two separate heating and cooling systems. It has 8-inch thick walls to insulate. It's outrageous. And he still loves it. It's still what he does.
I say this tongue in cheek, but I also know a guy who smokes 2 packs a day for the last 50 years and doesn't have lung cancer.
That is exactly true.
Like some people can do it, but most of us aren't built that way.
Those of us that really get hardcore into it, look at a fish house like that at some point in our lives. I certainly did and went, wow, I wish I could do that. But had I done that,
I wouldn't be here.
It would have fallen apart years ago, right? But wow, there was a point in my life where I really wanted that. There was a point in my life where I loved having 60 aquariums in my basement.
Yeah. I think it's really hard for people to figure out what they actually want out of this hobby. Because if you want the object, like if you want the tank, then a fish house isn't for you. But if you want the project, if that's the part of it that gives you the joy, then you can do it. But
it's true.
The project doesn't give me the joy. I want to look at something pretty. And if I want to look at something pretty, I can't tell myself that I can spend 10 hours a week making it work.
Right.
Yeah.
That's an interesting split. Because I immediately had to try to apply it to where I feel like I am today. And I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want something pretty or if I want the project. The one in my basement is certainly not a project. It could be prettier, but I don't want to take the time to make it prettier. But it is quite pretty.
But it's
that's interesting.
It's an awesome bar tank, which is what you want right now.
That's true. Yeah. But it's I guess I'm thinking that through with I'm going to try to say this just right. Mm-hmm. I want to do more.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
But I don't.
Yeah. My trajectory the last year or so has been trying to hybridize those two things. Mm-hmm. You'll notice I'm still doing projects, mm-hmm. but I have definitely been experimenting with like the, how do I make a aquascaped crib grow out tank?
Right.
How do I make this functional but still aesthetically pleasing? Mm-hmm. There's a way to do it. Mm-hmm. It's just how. And that's just the journey of figuring that out has been fun though.
Yeah. As we've gone through some of the recording some of these podcasts, they've been inspiring to me, but I haven't followed through on any of them. And I don't know why. We did our biotope podcast not long ago, and one of the tanks I thought about doing, that still the idea of it sounds absolutely incredible to me. The clown killies with the jelly bean.
Yeah.
That's going to be I'm going to do that one of these days. Darn it. I'm going to do it. I could just do it, but I'm not.
No. I'm saying that you should steal that 12-gallon display tank on the counter there and just do it there.
I know, right?
Yeah. Just need to choose a spot.
Yeah. That's probably a good idea. Instead of doing it up here, doing it in the studio, I should do it out on the floor and just...
Yeah.
And then make somebody else take care of it for me.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
The project is still fun to me. When I go out on a service to do a setup, I can't stand the idea of having to do it until I get on site and start putting this whole thing together and start putting the rocks
in. Setting up a project is really fun. Some people are just the type of people that they want something to do for 20 to 30 minutes twice a week.
It's true.
And then everything else, which wouldn't matter what it was, they'd still be doing something for 20 or 30 minutes every week. That's the true. Part of it that I can't, that's the bridge I can never cross.
Yeah.
That wanting that routine of it.
You and I are alike in that way, that we're not routine people.
No.
About nothing.
I need to see something and then want to do it and then do it.
Right. It's a good thing my dog begs for food right. now, because I would forget to feed her.
Yes. Yeah.
She won't let me, but.
Yeah. I tend to not be a routine person, but I do force it upon myself because my wife is a very routine person. Mm. So it's good for me to have things that like ground me into her reality almost. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that like, even though my wavelengths may vary, there's a point in time where our wavelengths are in sync every week. Mm. Nice. So like having like Fridays are these days are my chores days. Those are the days that I do my water changes, I do whatever else I need to do around the home, and that does help ground me in a way where like Alyssa and I can orient our schedules around each other, and it works. I don't know how else to describe it.
No, I get it.
And now all of a sudden, this is a lot of self-awareness required for fish tanks. Did you start therapy before you got your fish tank or afterwards?
Or because of it.
Because of it.
That's the thing, though. It is like keeping aquariums isn't like Ben brought it up earlier. It's not like knitting. It's not like you can't just put it down. It's a lifestyle choice because you are choosing to maintain the life of other things. It's like this is me again going to an extreme far end example, but it's like having a kid. Like you can't just put it down. Like
it's not horrible to use examples like that, right?
Yeah.
So let's apply it to a dog.
Yeah.
Right? For a dog, it's sometimes that chore of my dog won't poop in our yard. So we have to take her for a walk 3 or 4 times every single day, right? That does become a chore. Even after 7 years of doing it, it becomes a chore. And this is with a dog, and I'm going to be a little harsh here, right? Dogs live for 12 years. And I wish my dog would live much longer than that, of course. But that's 12 years of sometimes it becomes chore-like. Clownfish live for 30.
Yeah.
Goldfish live for 50 plus. Koi can live for 100, documented. This is a commitment. This is a... That whole chore thing, if you're doing this right, you better get darn used to it.
Yeah, I almost... people are going to hate me for this. I almost feel like making room in your life for a dog or a cat is easier than a fish tank.
I think that's true.
Because the cats and dogs do integrate into your lifestyle. Like you have to take your dog for a walk, sure.
Right.
But like overall, beyond that, Splash more or less fits into your lifestyle.
Right.
Like she adapted to you.
Especially now because she just sleeps all the time.
Yeah.
It's just pretty easy.
But fish tanks aren't like that. You are making a separate living space within your living space.
Yeah.
And it needs to function. It's like from a fish perspective, you have put the International Space Station in your living room.
Yeah.
And you have to keep it running.
Yeah. But on the flip side, you can choose to have a husky or you can choose to have a Splash.
Exactly.
Just like true. You can in your fish tank.
That's true.
You can choose a super high maintenance tank or you can choose one that you can let coast for a little bit. Just takes a little bit of self-awareness to get there.
So that's a pretty good segue into, we should summarize a little bit some of the causes here, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we can start talking about ways to avoid it.
Yeah.
We talked about too much too fast.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think that also goes into chaotic fish rooms, which fish rooms without any rhyme or reason, or fish rooms that, you know, aquarium clubs are a great thing and a bad thing for a hobby because you get all these great deals and sometimes you just have to do it. And so all of a sudden you end up with all of these aquariums, like 60, speaking from personal experience there. But the chaotic fish rooms are a thing.
Refer back to our podcast on designing a fish room and how to avoid that.
Yes. A lack of planning is a contributor to burnout, whether it's a fish room or a single tank, honestly.
Yeah, yeah. Disasters.
Big oof.
A saltwater tank that cracks or a plumbing leak.
Mm-hmm.
Or
a female blue striped clown kills your male a year and a half in.
All of a sudden you're done with saltwater forever.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Easier to get burned out in saltwater than in freshwater.
I argued with you, but I fully agree with that.
Yeah,
it's a thing.
Yeah. So saltwater is more work. There are less and different. There's less variation in saltwater. The oceans are really big, but freshwater is a completely more diverse ecosystem environment.
You can carve out a little niche in freshwater where like you can have something that no one else has. That's really hard to do in saltwater.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And so here's a little bit of a good segue into how to avoid it. Breeding and propagation challenges in saltwater are fewer and far between. You can breed killifish in a mason jar. Right?
Right.
There's nothing you could do in saltwater in a mason jar. That's not true. You can. I know.
But it's not going to be that.
It's not going to be that. No. Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you keep the love going on an older reef tank?
I have two ideas for that. And one of them starts the day you set it up. And that is where you set it up. Saltwater aquariums in kitchens last way longer than saltwater aquariums in bars and bedrooms and basements, 3Bs.
You mean tanks that exist in places you actually live in instead of just kind of spend some time in to sleep or do nothing?
And honestly, I think kitchens are better than living rooms. Not partially because we spend more time there, but also we spend time in kitchens working on stuff.
Yeah, you're already in the right headspace.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas in the living room, you sit down on your couch with your glass of wine or your beer or your coffee or your tea or whatever, your bowl of ice cream, whatever it is.
Or your rum.
Or your rum. and you just want to enjoy it.
Yep. Or you just stare at it going, wow, that looks bad. I hate that thing. Yeah.
When did it grow all this hair algae?
I have a really good friend who they had their aquarium in their basement in the utility room for like 4 years.
Wow, utility room.
Yeah, in a room they never go into. And I kept saying, dude, man, you gotta move this into your kitchen or something. I'm you know, as I'm telling the story, I'm totally backtracking on my idea of putting it in a kitchen. He put it in his kitchen. He had one setback and he took his tank down and got out of the hobby.
What a guy.
I know. For him, that was Nick and Tracy.
Mm.
For him, it was, I can't have anything looking terrible in my kitchen. In the utility room, they could walk away from it.
Mm-hmm. On the other hand, when he went to set up that second tank, he was like, he started with the mindset of, okay, I'm really going to go for it this time. And then he really bit off more than he could chew.
He did.
Trying to get himself interested again.
Yeah, he did. He was done before he set
up. I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. And that does happen where sometimes that setup process is so long and you have to buy so much stuff before you even get going that you are a little burnt out by the time you even start.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think this is a good time for me to interject with, I had a very specific kind of long idea of how to articulate the idea of how do you challenge yourself enough that you stay interested, but not so much that you overextend yourself.
That challenge becomes work.
Yes.
Right.
And like I alluded to how a lot of time people, when they start stagnating in the hobby, they move in the direction of they either get a new tank or they get a new fish or blah, blah, blah. And I alluded to, I don't think that's sustainable largely because I think adding more work when you probably need to step back a little bit is probably the wrong way to go. And so some ideas that I came up with, and feel free to poke holes in them or whatever, but you mentioned the reef tank guy who does the frag tank.
Yeah.
So I didn't think of that off the top of my head, but I came up with for years that five generation cherry barb breeding project.
Oh yeah.
I had the main community tank that I kept everything in.
Yeah.
And then I had a 5 gallon in my bedroom that was separate that I would select out whatever female I wanted, put her in there, fatten her up. And then I would pick the male I wanted from the community tank, put him in there, let them do their thing so that my project, there was always something to do with the project, but it wasn't really adding like a 5 gallon tank on top of a 75 gallon community tank.
Yeah.
It's not that much.
Yeah.
And the nice thing about projects like that is the community tank could go on autopilot literally whenever.
Right.
And if I didn't want to be raising fish,
don't raise them that time.
Don't raise them. Or a lot of times for me, it was, I just didn't pull out a female.
That's one of the fun parts about a lot of these aquarium projects. You can keep your tank going with, okay, you have to put some effort into it, right? But you can do a project and that you can walk away from for a while. And that's okay.
Yeah. I also think the idea of either finding ways to get better or finding ways to improve what you already have. Like, I love the idea. I love the trajectory we've seen in the freshwater in the last 2 years where people have their one tank, and when they're ready, they upgrade, quote unquote, to planted. And then at some point, they'll get a nicer light. And then at some point, they'll get CO2 for it. As their skill gets better, people are picking up equipment that's more finicky or harder to learn. Or I also love that, like, people are getting into aquascaping, and this is the one that I think more people should get into. I love the idea of, and I'm starting to get to the point where I might be able to do this myself at home. I'm excited about it. I love the idea of having your main display and then a secondary, for me, it's a 10 gallon,
right,
with just plants that I'm propagating, which means that in the not too distant future, that means that when I want to rescape the main tank,
Right.
I can. If yes. I'm tired of it looking like something, or I just want a project to do an afternoon, it's there. Mm-hmm. And then, you know what? It's the main display that I can always put on autopilot at any given time. And it's a low-tech, low-fish load 10-gallon. It doesn't need that much attention.
Right.
Right.
Right. Amy, you don't have salt water right now at
no,
all.
No, I don't have any salt right now.
What made you stop?
The project that I was doing at the time fell off, and because I lost like the main reason I was doing it.
The mantis shrimp, mm-hmm. right?
And I just didn't feel like bringing water. But for me, it was that there was something I really wanted to do when I did it, and then I didn't need to do it anymore.
I think that's a pretty good point. Yeah. Anyway, so the project tank.
Yeah, Amy and I, when you left, we kept talking. We shouldn't have, but she said something to the effect of finding new joy in the thing you already have instead of getting something different, which mm-hmm. doesn't quite work because once it's not new anymore, it's not new anymore.
Right.
Oh, yeah, and we were talking about once you realize you don't want to do something, stop doing it.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Looking at my little coral frags and being like, it's going to take 5 years for these to even be impressive. Yeah. No, that's not for me.
got bored quick.
But guess what?
That's why there's plants.
Yes. Or like in the case of the coral frags, Ben mentioned some people, it overtakes their display tank. That becomes more fun. If you're that person, please enjoy it. We need those people.
Absolutely. Right. Right. Yeah.
But like there's enough in this hobby where everyone doesn't need to be good at everything. Everyone needs to be good at the thing that they find the most fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a really good way to say that. Okay. So avoiding burnout. That's what, find something to be good at it.
Yeah.
I've always been jealous of those people with their fish rooms that are focused on something. Mine never could. I couldn't do the one thing. I couldn't even just do plants, which, you know, then you could do a whole bunch of other stuff.
Right.
I had to have this and this and this and this and this. And I know a guy who's like, he's a shell dweller guy. Right. What he does.
He's a shell dweller guy too.
And I know a barb guy and an episto guy and a betta guy and those people that just specialize. They stick to it.
There's something to being in your lane.
There's something to being like an expert.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is.
Like, I've been kind of moving in the direction like I've alluded to. So I have betta stictos, and I'm not trying too hard to breed them right now, mm-hmm. mostly because the project that's really overtaking me and becoming a thing is like I'm in the process of basically trying to set up a stud book for local breeders for those Maliwis.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, do I really want to take time away from this? And also, I mentioned my plant propagation tank. That's where the stictos live, and I'm loath to take them out of it because... dang, do they look good in there? And so I'm like, I'm happy where everything is. So like, why change? Whereas like the changing new project is trying to get new breeders in, trying to keep track of like people updating me when they get breeding, like, and when they have fry and when they like, it's keeping me interested mm-hmm. and keeping me stimulated. Right. And it's doing the thing that I need. So I step back from the stictos trying to breed them, A, because I realize I like them exactly where they are, but B, I'm getting the stimulation I need to not burn out and keep enjoying it I think I found my community of fish keepers where it's like other people trying to do this thing and they don't need to stay in, but as long as they're willing to let me keep track of their spawns, that's enough.
I think you just illustrated three of the points that I was going to make about avoiding burnout. One of them, the stictos. That was a dream fish for you, right? You've wanted those fish for a really long time.
Years.
If you have a dream fish, get it. If they're really pricey and you have multiple tanks, sell one of your tanks. Get your dream fish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if it's freshwater, really pricey is... probably under $200.
Right.
Almost definitely.
Right.
And I do not regret that purchase at all. I want to be very clear at that. Mm-hmm. I love
yeah.
those fish. I just realized I like them as pets, not a breeding project. It's great. I love it.
Yeah. Well, the fact of the matter is they'll still probably start breeding whenever they feel like anyway. So why beat your head against the
wall?
Exactly.
So like I'm 1,000% on Ben with the get the dream fish.
Get the dream fish.
Get it.
Two of the other points, like 1, 2, and 3, keep setting new goals, right? Your goals with those Milouis where you were like, I want to set up a community of fish, a community of breeders. I want to make sure this becomes part of the hobby. That's a goal. That's a project that you're working on. And then the other one was hang out with other fish geeks. I mean, you just, boom, 1, 2, and 3 right there. You just illustrated all three of those with that. Between stick toast and the Milouis.
It's great.
Yeah.
I am genuinely right now, and I've told this to Amy, I'm not sure if I, right now I am having more fun with the three tanks I have than I ever have in the hobby before.
That's fantastic.
And I love it.
Yeah.
It's great.
Fish clubs are an incredible way to avoid burnout. They feed the addiction, sometimes a little too much, but they can be an incredible way to avoid the burnout, because when you're, a couple of things happen in fish clubs. And one is what we just talked about with you with those Milouis, where you get this community of like-minded people where you've always got this person or these people that every month when you go to that meeting, you seek them out and say, hey, what's going on with your Milouis? What's going on? You know, whatever that project is. Oh, really? Well, you should try this. And then you can't wait to get home and try that thing, whatever you talked about. Or this new thing, you can't wait to get back to the club and say, hey, I did this and this is what happened. And you that excitement that builds when you're a member of an aquarium club.
It's
like
infectious.
Mm-hmm. It's so much fun. It's so cool.
And by the way, if you don't have that, check out our Watercolors Aquarium Gallery podcast listeners group on Facebook. We would love to be those people for you.
That's the wonderful thing about the era we live in is if you can't do it physically, you can do it virtually.
Mm-hmm. Just taking joy in other people's accomplishments is a huge part of the hobby.
I do feel an immense swell of joy whenever anyone has their project that they're a couple people have started posting. I recently got my first wild type betta. Oh my God, I was so happy.
Yes. Yeah. That's good stuff.
It's good.
Yep. We love hearing about that, but I've started seeing that some of our listeners are getting more actively interacting with each other and building a little community around that. And that sense of community helps avoid burnout.
Yes.
Definitely.
The other thing that aquarium clubs do is they have a couple little competition programs.
Yep.
And that kept me going for a long time. The HAP, which is the Horticulturist Award Program, and the BAP, which is the Breeder Award Program, where you can set goals and have some little fun, friendly competition that, pardon the pun, breeds all kinds of excitement.
Yeah. Find a rival and you'll never get bored.
Oh, right. Yeah, exactly.
My favorite was competition that went literally nowhere was about 4 years ago now. Holy cow. Me and two other people in the club were racing to see who could be the first to spawn a Desmopuntus barb. And I'll be honest, none of us pulled it off, but holy cow, was it fun at the time.
Yeah,
and the part that was really cool about it was anytime any one of us learned a new piece of information of so these Czech breeders managed to pull it off by doing this. The other two knew about it immediately. Like, it wasn't like there was any hoarding of information, because that wouldn't have been sportsmanlike.
Right. Exactly. That's the community of fish people. That's how that community interacts with each other.
It was great.
Yeah. Being a part, there we go. There's another good point to take away, right? How to avoid burnout in your hobby. Find a community around that part of your hobby that keeps you interested. There's something out there for absolutely every section of this hobby, from cutesy decor in a betta sorority tank to hardcore killifish breeders that, you know, spend 3 years looking for that one species from the right collection area.
Mm-hmm. There's always a pocket.
There's always a pocket.
It's there to be explored.
Yep. Gary Lang can find someone to trudge around Papua New Guinea with.
Right.
Everyone can find someone who wants to do what they're doing.
Yeah. I think the biggest, and we harp on this and have done it in a couple of different other podcasts. I think the biggest way to avoid burnout is make maintenance easy.
Yes.
Buy the Python. If you haven't, do it today. This is your sign.
I think water changes are the number one chore that needs to be as easy as possible.
Yes. Yeah.
Yep.
It needs to be so easy that... Because if you can put it off as long as you can because it's going to be hard, you need to... Like, for me, it needs to... And this is genuine. It needs to be easy enough where I'm like, Charles, if you don't have the motivation to do something that'll take you 5 minutes, something is grievously wrong with you.
Right. Right.
Yeah. I need to be able to do it on a whim.
Yes.
When I had my big saltwater system going, I had a barrel system for water changes that it took me 3 days to do a water change, about a minute and a half each day. I did water changes. Before that, I learned a lot since then. My tank would easily go 4 months, 3 months without getting a water change. Once I set up that water change system, and oh, by the way, if you would like help designing one of those for your saltwater system, shoot me a message and I will be glad to share exactly how I did that because it does make things much easier. But I was doing water changes every 2 weeks on my system for a number of years, really until the store.
Yeah, I think you tore down that tank a year or two after I started.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was I had a big, huge bubble coral in my reef tank that I had had for, at that point, it would have been 13 years. Now we're going on 19 years.
Yeah, it's got to be close.
Yeah. And in my tank at home, it was close to 2 feet across. And that was my my indicator species for me. When that started to degrade from lack of care, that's when I knew I needed to shut my fish room down. Because that was an incredible, irreplaceable coral that, and it did suffer. It's now looking incredible again in our reef tank here.
Because we have a dedicated coral person babying it all the
time.
Exactly.
And the irony is that when we moved it, it started declining because it didn't have enough nutrients.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It took us a while to figure out, we need to feed this thing constantly.
Beast. Yeah. But that was an indicator for me that I needed to shut it down.
Right.
And I think that's another important part, another important lesson in this. Knowing when it's time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I have genuinely had the conversation with people where they'll be like, I think I want to get out of it. And they sound so guilty about it. And I'm like, listen, you shouldn't feel bad about that. This is a hobby. It's supposed to be fun. If it's not fun, find something else.
If it's become a chore.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's my next question is always, are you sure? Because there's infinite things that you can do. Would you rather just grow a plant in a jar than do that if that's going to be the thing you can?
And the surprising number of people actually go with that option and stick with it.
Oh, right. It can be easy.
Those Wabikusa jars sell like crazy. And I thought that was such a stupid idea when we started.
Cute and easy. How do you get better than that?
Yeah.
This will be perfect for my desk. I've gotten that 3 times in the last week.
Right.
That's great.
We should talk about being realistic too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Planet Aquarium hobby is in this amazing aquascaping revolution right now, and it's in the middle of it. I think it's a really cool, really great thing. But here's a little secret that y'all need to know about those incredibly aquascaped tanks you all drool over. Two important points. Number one, they spend 6 months building that aquascape. Number two, they tear it down after 6 months and start over.
Yeah, the best analogy I can come up with off the top of my head is watching Tony Hawk do literally anything and then, and then going, I could do that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to tell you all honestly, no, I can't and I shouldn't.
Right.
And if you see one of those time lapses of people setting up a brand new aquascape with tissue cultures, just close your eyes and move away. Because it's all, it's really easy to have something that just looks pristine when it is. But yeah. Do you want that, or do you want an aquarium in your home that's going to look good forever?
That's an important note about those tanks. They look really good straight on.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them look funny from the side or even from an angle.
Yeah.
They look funny.
Built on optical illusions, which is right. amazing for aquarium aquascaping contests, which are photo contests.
Yeah.
Not aquarium contests.
Do you want an amazing photograph or an amazing ecosystem yeah. in
right.
your living room?
Yeah. Like that's totally the distinction we need there. It's a photo contest, not an aquascape. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you can have a beautiful aquarium, but it doesn't need to be those ones.
Yeah. I love aquascaping. I love aquascaping contests.
Mm-hmm.
I love looking at those pictures and I love dreaming about them. But you got to be realistic about it.
Well, it's a beauty contest.
Same.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah.
I love them, but I am not that person.
No.
It's a carefully crafted illusion to make something look as gorgeous as possible. And maybe if you took all the makeup and everything off, they'd still be gorgeous, but you know, they're a little more likely to have zits on them. Like,
right.
like normal human beings or normal aquariums that have a little bit of algae.
Yeah.
Don't sweat that little stuff like that because you see pictures out there that look perfect.
It seems like we should be able to do that because we put the same crap in the tank. We put spiderwood and manzanita wood and we put the same plants and the same fish mm-hmm. and Sirius stone or dragon stone and all of that stuff is available and the aqua soil is there and it's all there and it's all available. Know exactly what it is that they are accomplishing. And they're accomplishing great things, and it's okay to try it, but just remember the amount of effort, the amount of time and work that goes into that. They didn't do that in an afternoon.
No, and I'm going back to that distinction of it's a great, it's a photo contest, not an aquarium cause.
Right.
I never articulated that mm-hmm. in my head. Holy crap, is that accurate though?
Yeah.
It's a different question. Like, yeah. are you trying to make a car that's functional or one that looks cool?
Right.
Which isn't necessarily the same question.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Concept cars exist for
yes.
a reason.
Yeah. Even the great Takashi Amano in a question and answer session with him where he was showing one of his absolutely incredible, beautiful aquascapes that it had the perfect ripple in the top, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the fish were all pointed in the same direction, right? And somebody stood up and asked the question, Mr. Amano, what filter do you use to get that ripple effect, right? And there was a little translation because Takashi Amano didn't speak English. He spoke through a translator. There was this little moment of translation and then a slight chuckle between Mr. Amano and the translator. And the translator just looked up and said, oh, hair dryer.
But it looked beautiful in the photo.
Beautiful.
Do you guys remember hearing what George Farmer's water change schedule was the first week after he set up an aquascape? It was like,
oh, yeah.
After day two, I do 80%. After day four, I do 60%. After day six, I do 40%. And like on and on with those big water changes right. just within the first week,
mm-hmm.
which like I have to pay my water bill. No. And I live in a Great Lakes state.
Right.
I don't even need to worry about any of that other stuff. But if you want it to look perfect, you're doing stuff like that.
That's what you got to do.
But if doing stuff like that helps you to avoid burnout, then please dive into it.
I want to rephrase Amy's phrasing there. If you want it to look good for photo, that's what you got to
right.
do. Perfect. Aquarium is different than perfect photo, and I'm fully bought into this distinction now. I'm on it.
Yeah.
Because it's different.
It's, yeah. It's
an aquarium with detritus can still be a perfect aquarium.
And yes, and I've intentionally done it.
It won't win any awards, but it'll still be cool.
Devin's making a Mars tank where he's leaning into the fluorite, having created a lot of dust, and it's a cool concept.
Cute.
Yeah. Speaking of, just cool concepts.
Yeah.
So where's that burnout for you guys? What is it what made you walk away and what made you come back? So one of our, and this is one of the things I want to make sure that we end with. I'm going to say it once, I'm going to say it once again just before we close, but whenever I see somebody walk in the store that that I knew from days back, and they come in and say, yeah, I had one a while ago. I'm thinking about getting into it. Once you get your hands wet, it's hard to keep them dry.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it that somebody out there has had the shutdown moment, the I'm done moment? And obviously, if you're listening to this podcast, you're back into it, right? What got you back in? If you've never had that burnout and you've been doing it for, let's go with 10 plus years, what keeps you in it? What keeps you excited about it?
Can I actually answer this question for me?
Please.
I got back in for wild bettas. Mm-hmm. And they're not my main focus at the moment, and they probably won't be for a while. But let me tell you, part of what got me back into it is that they were so hard to find, and then they still kind of are.
Yeah, it's the quest.
It's the quest.
Right.
Every time someone in the podcast listener's Facebook page, I don't comment on all of them, mm-hmm. and maybe I should.
Yeah.
But every time someone posts of, this is my wild beta, this is my update, this is my... I do see those, and I do smile every time.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I do that with Killifish.
Yeah. It just... Absolutely. It keeps me going.
Yeah. What keeps you going, Amy?
It's hard to imagine not having an aquarium in my life. That's what keeps me going. It just feels like a natural extension of myself, my home, my decor. So whether or not I'm putting a lot into it at any given moment, it just needs to be there. I don't know.
Yeah, I get it. It's good. Well, let us know what keeps you there. You know, once you get your hands wet, it's hard to keep them dry.
I would love to hear some stories from this one. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like everybody's been on that edge, over it or close to it, even if you've only been keeping fish for a couple of years.
And I'm going to be honest, if you tell me you haven't been there, I do think you're lying to me. That's genuine.
Or you're just the luckiest person on earth.
Yeah, everyone at some point is contemplated, like even the guy that's been keeping only bettas for like 30, 40 years, he's contemplated quitting at some point.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
So if you do have those stories, please feel free to post them in that Watercolors Aquarium Gallery podcast listeners group. I got to say it every time because I'm the one who wrote the title of it.
Yeah.
Or just email them to us at podcast@watercolorsaquariumgallery.com. We do read those emails. We do see those posts, and it's amazing, and we love you guys.
Yes.
Don't forget to email those questions for our up-and-coming podcast and put in the tagline Origin of questions, or for Nick's eyes only, or don't look at this, Charles, or something along those lines, but put those questions in there.
Yeah. And as always, check out watercolorsaquariumgallery.com if you want to buy some stuff from us.
And let's be honest, you do want to buy some stuff from us.
Please.
You do. All right. Well, thank you so much for listening. Let's have lots of fun and keep those hands wet.